From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour is made in the recording studio. Chances are you know someone who's recorded some of their own music, either for posterity or in an effort to make a living. And it is, to say the least, an expensive and difficult road. But New York State's considering new legislation to maybe make it a little bit easier. Now, the state's already passed a film tax credit trying to bring more Hollywood productions here. You might remember when Spider-Man was in Rochester. Now they want to keep musicians recording here. With, I guess we could say, a similar tax credit. So how difficult is it to make a living in music, and what would this mean for the industry? Let's introduce our panel. First, the folks who are in studio with us. Nathan Davenport is here, the owner of Harmonious Recording Solutions. Nathan, nice to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Micah is here, a local musician and a recording artist making your way in a difficult industry. How are you, Micah?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Paul Vincent Nunes is here, an attorney and a children's recording artist. You know his children's recording artist work as Vincent Nunes. Nice to see you.
Good to see you again.
Thanks for being here. And on the line with us, we've got Assemblyman Joseph Lentil, who is sponsoring this legislation that the New York's Music Coalition has wrapped their arms around. Assemblyman, thank you for taking the time to join us.
Thank you, Evan. Good to have you there with your panel. Glad to talk to you.
Well, why don't you first of all tell us briefly, Mr. Lentil, about the fact that this is, you know, I know there's a big coalition downstate, but this isn't just a New York City kind of piece of legislation, is it?
No, it's not. It's for the entire state. A lot of people don't realize how big the music industry is upstate New York. And we're focusing on the Empire State as a tax credit, or I'd like to call it now a tax reform program.
Okay, so tell us how this would work. When I'm reading here in the New York Times covering it this week and others,
yeah,
I'm reading that the bill would provide companies and individuals who record and produce music in New York State with a 20% income tax credit for qualifying expenditures. First of all, is that accurate?
You got it.
And what is a qualifying expenditure?
Qualifying expenditures are the expenditures below the line, not to pay for the big-time singers who you employ at the studio, but to pay for the hard-working people underneath, as we like to say, below the line, who have to do all of the production work.
What do you think the possible impact is? Give me a sense for who is the kind of person who can be impacted by this.
Well, the whole industry will be impacted by this. That's really what we're talking about, because, you know, everybody talks about how New York, it's too expensive to do business here. And everybody also talks about that we don't need to do any provide any incentives for any of the people in the music industry, just like they thought we didn't have to do for the film industry, because everybody wants to make music in New York. Everybody wants to make films in New York. But we've learned over the past decade that that's not true, that they can make films in Toronto, that recording studios, Sony can move to New Jersey, that the Grammys don't have to be in New York. They can go to California. And our group that we put together to try and advocate for this tax credit / reform is called New York is Music. And we're trying to revive and help the music industry, not only to stay in New York, but to attract people to come in New York, because where else would you want to go to make music?
Well,
but New York, if it was palatable financially.
Well, and let me ask Paul Vincent Nunes, who's an attorney and a children's recording artist in studio. You understand it from a lot of different angles, being a recording artist yourself and someone who works as an attorney. What do you see the potential impact? We've got an assemblyman on the phone who's helping with this legislation. Who impacts, and what do you think?
Well, first of all, thank you for introducing that legislation. This has great potential for New York. And I think it brings to attention to the public at large at how large the music industry is in this state. And it's not just focused in New York City, although New York City is a, you know, it could be, is the 800-pound gorilla in the room. But yeah. Rochester has a very, very vibrant music scene and a very proud one. Evidenced by the folks who are in this room today. From Mike and Nathan and Jeff, but everyone from we know the rich musical history from Mangione and the jazz greats that emanate out of Rochester. We know music is being produced in upstate New York. We know there are quality studios in upstate New York. We know about the The studio at Linden Oaks,
yeah.
which I know.
We've seen James Taylor and many others come through the years.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Steve Gadd. I always call him Steve Gadd. But Paul, when it comes to this, is it cost prohibitive for some artists to record music?
Well, darn straight it is. You can ask Micah what it's going to be like for him to get his music out there and to start at an entry level when you don't have the funds or money is really tight. Even though there are great platforms these days through Kickstarter or GoFundMe, giving musicians access to funds that they've never had before, but still, studio time in the quality studios that these musicians need to create their art is expensive. And so having a below-the-line credits described by the senator is a big plus.
But Mr. Lentzel, can you write off studio time if you're a musician, or is this only for accompanying musicians and other... What are the kinds of costs here that we can expect to be impacted?
Well, it is the studio cost that would be included. And let me just say this about the bill. You know, this isn't... it's really a problem. We sat down with some of the segments of the music industry, and we're trying to use the model of the film industry tax credit. It really doesn't fit right. So what we're planning, and I just want to let your guests know that even though this is going to be in New York City in Brooklyn, and Brooklyn has exploded, by the way, with music, not unlike Rochester that you spoke about, that lawyers spoke about. But Brooklyn has exploded, which is my area, has music industry is growing by leaps and bounds. And so what we wanted to do was capture all of the segments of the music industry in and around us to have a discussion, a roundtable discussion about what should be in this bill. We have it out there. It is introduced, but it's more of what we would call a study bill so that the industry itself can have some input as to what they need and what kind of things that ought to be included in the tax credit and how we actually tailor it to their needs.
Well, let me ask Micah, who's a local musician who, again, I've heard your stuff. You sound great, but it's not always easy to break through. It can be expensive. Mm-hmm. Do you have any questions or do you have thoughts about how this kind of legislation could impact an artist trying to break through like yourself?
Right. Yeah, I was just curious, like, basically, who is eligible to apply? I was looking at the film tax credit and basically mirroring off of that, because that's more for huge production companies. And obviously, there's an incentive for them to work in New York, and there's an even bigger tax credit applied if production companies move to upstate New York, whether that would be the same for the music tax credit. Because what's the incentive for musicians, for companies, not to just keep on working in New York City rather than in upstate Western New York.
Go ahead, Assemblyman.
So if you want me to respond to that, that's why we're having this roundtable. We don't want that to happen. We don't want to have only the big guys be the ones that are going to get the tax credit. We want it to be able to be all-inclusive. And even though you may be right, there are some small production companies who can take advantage of the film tax credit. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me to tell you how that happens, but it does happen under the bill that some of the small film production companies can do it.
But Mike, are you getting the sense, Micah, that you, the next time you record, if this legislation passes, it impacts you directly?
I would say that it's more beneficial to a smaller company rather than an independent musician. From what I've read so far, I don't see how it would impact me personally.
Is that right or wrong, Assemblyman?
It's neither right or wrong, because we want this to impact all of the people who are involved in the music industry. We want to write the bill. The bill maybe that you're looking at that's actually, as I say, a study bill,
mm-hmm.
just to get it in so that we have something to work off of, is not written in stone, and it will be changed as we go along, because we're going to have a couple of hearings and roundtables before we get to January, I hope. And then when we get into the session in January, we'll introduce a final product that will, I hope, be, if it doesn't satisfy everyone, it'll satisfy most segments of the music industry.
All right, Assemblyman Lentil, before I let you go, where do you want people to go to sort of join that ongoing conversation as we go through and you work to sort of tinker with this legislation?
Well, we want to make it convenient for upstate people, so we may have to have a hearing in a central location in upstate New York. But right now we've planned our first roundtable discussion. That's not really a public hearing. And if there are participants in your audience that would like to attend, I can give you off air the name, and so your guests can have where they can be invited to come.
And NewYorkIsMusic.org is the website. New York
yes,
is music.
NewYorkIsMusic.org.
That's the website. Assemblyman Joe Lentil from downstate, from Brooklyn. Thank you for taking the time to fill us in on what you're doing here, and we hope you'll come back and talk to us if and when this becomes law.
Yes, I will, Evan. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Assemblyman Joe Lentil. Yes. Now, let me ask the other people in this room. Nathan Davenport's here. Jeff Schmidt is also here from Red Dart Music, among many others. Well, Jeff, why don't you come closer to the microphone, and our engineer Dave Campo didn't even know that you were...
Do that. Nice to be here, everybody.
We do have a look at this, Dave. We've got a full studio now. Go there ahead, go. Jeff. Go. Red Dart Music is what? Tell
us.
Well,
it's a partnership that Paul and I put together for production music some years back, and it's a website where you can go and find cues for production, usually spots, things like that, some political advertising, things like that. In fact, we should let Joe know about that.
Yeah, so
get back on the phone.
Yeah.
Get back on the phone.
All right, and so that's some of Jeff's background. Nathan Davenport's the owner of Harmonious Recording Solutions. When you're hearing this discussion about keeping recording here, do you see that impacting your work or the people you work with at all?
I mean, I do see that it will impact my work a little bit, but I would, like Micah was saying, I would like to see it be more all-inclusive, and hopefully it will help musicians directly, because that would help me more in the long run, because people will have incentive to actually go and record a record if they will get some sort of tax credit.
Where are you based?
I'm based out of Rochester. I do mobile production, so I go to places where people want to record and bring all my gear there.
All right, so in other words, you're impacted and your potential clients are impacted and are going to be more willing to stay here if this legislation ends up reaching them, as opposed to big studios, big companies,
right,
et cetera.
Right.
Okay. And so that, in your view, that's sort of still up in the air?
Yeah. I mean, I read over the bill and it seemed to be a little bit vague, and it was talking about companies a lot more than individuals. I would just like to see it, make sure it's all inclusive with individual musicians as well.
All right. Well, let me bring in on the phone Justin Kalifowitz, who's also with the New Yorkers Music Coalition. Justin, where are you joining us from?
I'm joining you from New York City.
New York City. See, we're all suspicious of you. I'm mostly kidding, but there certainly is an upstate musician concern that this kind of legislation looks at the big city with less regard for some of the either upstate or smaller musicians, smaller studios, et cetera.
Yeah, that's definitely not our plan. I mean, you know, we've already have several music institutions from upstate New York, and we're continuing to expand that list. Syracuse University's music industry program, which has a huge connection, obviously, to the local community, is involved. SUNY Oneonta is involved. The folks at Upstate Shows are already part of our coalition. And as our website very clearly indicates, we're super open broadly across New York State. And just to pick up on some of the items that, you know, Joe Lentil spoke about, and some of the panelists have touched on, you know, this the idea here is really to start a conversation, to get our, you know, the state officials to recognize what's going on in the music industry, the importance of the music industry across the state. And I think as the attorney said before, you know, yes, New York City is the 800-pound gorilla. There's no way around that. The same thing with the film business. That being said, you know, as you guys pointed out about Rochester, there are significant clusters of music-related businesses in the Hudson River Valley, in Syracuse, in Rochester, in Albany, in Buffalo. Every county in the state of New York has a music industry. The problem we've had is that we've never really self-identified. There's never been a statewide coalition before. And that was really the thesis behind launching New York is Music, is we should really self-identify, help figure out the size and scale of our industry, see if we can work with state officials and other institutions, public and private, to champion New York's music industry across the state.
Well, let me ask our panel in studio for your experiences with just, I think for those of us who've never recorded an album in a studio, we may be shocked to know some of the costs that go into it. And so let me start with Vincent Nunes. Paul, as Vincent Nunes, you've had to do a lot of work in studios, and let me start there. Give me a sense for the landscape of cost just to put an album together.
$10,000 to $15,000. Right off the top. That's a small production. You're talking to do quality work, spending the time in the studio. You got to be focused on about that as a benchmark.
And how does it break down?
That's just de minimis. I mean, if you want to do something, you can ask Micah what he's thinking about his production. I've seen minimalist approaches to production. My daughter, who we've talked about in the past, Julia Nunes, you can go to her website. Lived in Brooklyn for a number of years there, Justin. So there's no real war between upstate and downstate.
No.
We have family members everywhere. And I got two nephews in a band and playing in Brooklyn right now. So point is that it's expensive to do this. And studios are, I had conversations with Jeff here and many musicians. Studios are under siege. It's tough to make a buck in a recording studio these days. And I'm going to bet Nathan could comment on how many studios we've seen just dim the lights low, some shutter and disappear as home productions became the way to go. But there's still certain things you can only do in a studio. And
GarageBand can only take you so far.
You got it.
Micah, you're laughing at that.
Yeah.
But you know, Paul Vincent Nunes is telling us in this regard, he says $10,000 to $15,000 right off the top. I mean, I don't know if everyone has the exact same baseline, but that is going to shock some people. Mm-hmm. And for you, what's the process like when you have to think about how to afford to put a record out?
Save, and you have to play a lot of shows to save up. The last record that I did in Nashville, and when all is said,
why'd you do it in Nashville?
I know the guy that ran the day-to-day operations there that was able to get me a deal. It's one of the nicest studios I've been to. It's Black River Studios. It's actually owned by Terry Pagula, sort of local connection.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when all is said and done, it was about $6,000 to $7,000 for me to, from pre-production to post-production, put the album out. And that was with bare-boned acoustic. I had one session player come in who played three different instruments. So
okay, so and Nathan, you with your business, you know, Paul's talking about just the challenge even for studios now to keep it going. Give me a sense for what studios are dealing with.
Well, I mean, as far as what I do, it is a little bit different, and you were talking about like $10,000 to $15,000 or $6,000 to $7,000. Mm-hmm. Grand. Mine is on the lower spectrum in price, not in quality, and I purposely do that to make it more affordable. So I'm charging $40-$50 an hour versus $100-$150 more.
I feel like $40-$50 an hour is what I heard back in 1998 or something like that. It's pretty
it's pretty cheap.
That's the way you have to compete, is that, in other words?
A lot of it is price. And the only problem with that is people look at price and associate that with quality, which is not necessarily true. And I can do a lot of things that some studios can do as well. And as far as the gear I have really nice microphones, really nice preamps. I have really nice stuff. So,
okay. And Jeff Schmidt from Red Dart Music, you've been in Linden Oaks. You've been in some of the places where the great names have come through in Rochester. Has the industry changed for what you do?
Oh, God, yeah. We go way back. Paul and I had produced, we've been producing his Vincent records for some time now. And we've watched the change over the years. You know, there's a good news, bad news thing. The good news is that the music industry has kind of changed with computers. It pushed it out to everybody. But it's still a people-based business. You know, it's what I think of as the Ernest Hemingway typewriter syndrome. You can give a lot of typewriters out, but that doesn't make a lot of novels. You know, you still have to have somebody work on the gear. And so it does get to be a lot of people moving around. Like Micah was mentioning. You know, you bring in people to play. So it'd be nice to see something that has a larger economic package. You've got to bring in musicians or producers from different places, and they need to stay somewhere.
Session musicians, things like that?
Yeah, producers, whoever's coming to town, you know. It's an economic impact for the area. It'd be nice to see it kind of, you know, fold it together into a larger effort than just a tax grab.
And when you're recording as Vincent Nunes, and again, for our audience who doesn't know, Mike is a recording artist, Vincent Nunes Music, which is, where are you online?
VincentNunes.com.
Okay.
That's easy to go to.
And Micah, where are you online?
You can go to Facebook.com/MicahMusic.
Okay, Micah, M-I-C-A-H. For those of us who don't know Vincent Nunes, when you are recording, do you hire session musicians? Do you
make those? Absolutely. Yeah. And I got to say, Nathan's comments are well taken about small studios or bare-bone approaches to a production. Because I have, as Jeff will attest, I have embraced that over the many years that I've been working in on my own musical projects, as have other family members, specifically my daughter, Julia. Nathan's point is that price does not always equate to quality. And I'm going to double down on his statement there. Nathan's absolutely right. You can get amazing sound and amazing quality for a low budget. At the same time, some of the production issues that we dealt with in the Vincent record, we brought in 20 kids into a room. You're not going to do that in someone's living room.
Right.
You needed a studio, or we needed a horn section. And we had a gospel choir come in one time. You just can't do that in the second bedroom in the house.
Yeah.
Now, I've done a lot of my pre-production with Jeff at Forte Sound Design, which is a small space. It's basically done out of a bedroom, which is how many, 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 many musicians are functioning these days, out of the second bedroom or kitchens. And actually, we just started a project where I actually turned my living room, where I have a Steinway Grand, turned my living room into a sound room to record tracks for the next project. Many musicians are working remotely, just like Nathan's describing. These guys, like what Nathan Davenport is doing, are vital to the creation of music in Rochester, and doing it at a budget. But I go back to, you need studios like Linden Oaks. You need studios like the many great studios in town that have the space, the gear, that allow you artists a larger scale of project. And this bill can help that a lot.
Okay, so we're looking at this bill that has been created. Well, I say created. It's sort of being shaped right now. It's the New York is Music Coalition is online at nyismusic.org if you want to check that out. And Justin Kalifowitz is on the line with us from New York City, part of the New York is Music Coalition. Justin, now that we've sort of outlined the challenges that face musicians when they record, what I want to know when it comes to this legislation is this designed to prevent big names from recording in another state and New York State loses the business, or is the greater concern the Micahs of the world, the Vincent Nunes of the world, whoever it is going to feel like they can't afford to do it at all anymore?
You know, the truth of the matter is we believe in sort of the broader music ecology, right? I think New York State is suffering from the fact that, you know, there's this conversation about cost across the state that other states have addressed, you know, whether it be Tennessee offering a 25% cash rebate for all qualified costs, you know, the state of Georgia, the state of Louisiana, the province of Ontario, and the city of Toronto just offering unbelievable incentives to move recordings. I mean, we've seen record producers move their entire operation across state lines to take advantage of these things. We have seen artists originally book space in recording studios, not only here in New York City, but upstate as well, figure out the cost and then realize that they know someone in Nashville who can do it cheaper. And what happens is you start to see a breakdown of the ecology, the entire music ecology. And what we're looking for is not only to retain the business we have, to sit, provide, you know, make it more reasonably priced for musicians at all levels to create their next project, but make it more reasonably priced for folks to invest in recording studios. As has been pointed out, you know, the cost of making a record is expensive, sure, using sort of high-end gear, particularly folks who like to record on vintage gear. Not everyone wants to make things digitally and use things like GarageBand. People, there's a definite difference in the sound, and real artists understand that, and producers understand that. The investment into building a full-scale studio can, you know, you can do something in the $50,000 range, but a lot of the studios across the state have seen investments of several hundred thousand dollars in gear, not to mention what they pay the architects, not to mention the, you know, purchasing the land or renting the real estate that they're on. And, you know, it's a real significant investment that small businesses make here across the state. And, you know, our real goal is to kind of help both sides. We want, you know, obviously the big corporate clients, and those aren't only the record labels and publishers and studios. It's also thinking about, you know, music more broadly. Across the state, there are people creating music for advertising. It's a very significant but largely unmeasured part of the music industry. And a lot of that happens, you know, across New York State. We want to keep it here. We've seen a number of folks from the advertising world comment that they used to do everything in New York, and now they're doing things out of state because it's just so much cheaper. There's so many more options. There's so many more musicians have moved. So the real goal with this legislation is to try to figure out a way not only to retain our business and help the local creative community and help the small businesses that are here, but also to attract business that has been going elsewhere, business that's been going, you know, over the border into Toronto and down into Nashville and into Texas and, of course, out to Los Angeles as well.
Justin, before I let you go, tell us what we'll find if we go to nysmusic.org.
So you'll first see some of our initial supporters, which is now, I think, numbering over 75 different organizations. You'll learn a little bit more information about our goals of identifying the size and scale of New York's music business, some of our advocacy missions, and more information about the Empire State Music Production Tax Credit. And most importantly, you'll find information on how to sign up to join the coalition, be kept up to date about our efforts, not only on this bill, but on future initiatives that we'll be doing across the state. And, you know, I encourage everyone who's a stakeholder in the music industry, whether or not you own a large-scale business or you're an independent songwriter, producer, musician, or anyone in between, if you're a stakeholder in the music business, we'd like to hear from you.
Justin, this is Paul Paul Vincent Dunes here. Do you have a Facebook presence?
We do. Yeah, it's, you know, Facebook. Just look, NY is Music.
Excellent. Thanks.
Thank you for taking the time. Justin Kalifowicz from the New York is Music Coalition, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again as this progresses, Justin. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back, and there's sort of a parallel issue that was recently covered for musicians, and that's the question of, if you say you are an artist, but you make little money from selling your art, can your work be considered a profession in the eyes of the Internal Revenue Service? And we just got an answer from the United States Tax Court. So for all of the artists out there, whether it's music or other forms of art, and you want to call it a profession, we're going to have the answer for you. If you missed it, it's next on Connections. Stay with us. I'm Evan Dawson on the next Connections. It's Education Friday. Who better to educate us about music than the great Andre Previn? The legend sits down for a conversation during his visit to Rochester. And we'll look at how doctors are trying to educate patients about better sleep habits. In particular, they're pushing awareness of new techniques to fight sleep apnea. All of that coming up on Friday on Connections.
On the next Fresh Air, the underworld of consumer debt collection and debt buyers. The people who buy and sell your unpaid bills for pennies on the dollar. These collectors are largely unregulated, often make illegal threats against the consumer, and usually have no connection at all to the original lender. We talk with journalist Jake Halpern about his new book, Bad Paper. Join us.
Tonight at 7.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We have a panel who's talking about making it in music and what New York State is thinking about doing, what a recent court ruling it says about what it means to be an artist. We've got Nathan Davenport here. He's the owner of Harmonious Recording Solutions, and as you've been hearing Nathan describe, take some of his solutions on the road. He can. You're mobile. Where do they find you online?
You can find me at harmoniousrecordingsolutions.com or facebook.com/harmoniousrecordingsolutions.
Micah is a local musician who's talking about his own way in the world of music, and Paul Vincent Nunes is here. Paul is an attorney as Paul Nunes and a recording artist, great recording artist for children as Vincent Nunes. And by the way, Paul, Paul Vincent Nunes.
it's a mouthful, isn't it?
I was pointed to a recent profile of you, and you've got some a partnership going with a special beneficiary. Tell us about that.
Oh, thank you. Well, I shot a music video this summer at the University of Rochester at the Warner School of Education at a program called Horizons. Horizons is an organization in town which provides education, academic programming for inner city youth, gratis. It's a free program. These kids were part of the video. I was so absolutely taken over the top by not just these kids, but the program, the organizers, Lynn Gatto, the executive director there. To cut to the chase, we've placed these CDs, my newest release, Smart Songs for Active Children, in Wegmans, and it's a discount price for a limited period of time in the Wegmans in the Monroe County area. Proceeds from the sale of that CD at Wegmans, did I mention Wegmans yet?
Your time is almost up.
Is going to Horizons, and encourage your listeners as the Christmas holidays approach. A good stocking stuffer would be Smart Songs for Active Children.
All right, so you're getting some of the background of Jeff Schmidt with Red Dart Music, who is a veteran in the industry now. And Jeff, from what you're hearing today, is this a valid effort to preserve the recording industry here, or is there sort of a natural evolution that's happening? What do you think?
It's probably both. You can't change technology. It's changed the way we do this business. But any tax credit, you know, taxes shape life, like water shapes the land, you know what I mean? And so anything's going to have a benefit. What that benefit exactly will be, it's probably unforeseen at this point. But, you know, technology changed, and taxes will help incent people to do things. So,
all current company excluded, who's the best you ever worked with?
The best?
Yeah, the best musician you ever worked with.
Well, I'd have to say
all current company excluded.
Wait, good,
current company excluded.
Oh, God.
Oh, I don't know. That's a tough one. Everybody, basically, you know, I was having this conversation with Andy the other day, Andy Babuk, who's got a new band out.
The Empty Hearts.
Empty Hearts, yeah. They're just going on tour. And, you know, we were talking about how basically when you get together, it's just, you know, people doing their best. And so I think that that's the way I approach it. Everybody in the studio, it's a tough place in a lot of respects. And so everybody's just doing the best they can. So at that moment, they're doing their very best.
That's your way of sort of politically not choosing one.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Well done there, Jeff.
It's a good answer. Well,
thank you.
If you say you are an artist, but you make little money from selling your art, which anybody who's tried to make it in music, that's always how it starts. You have to start somewhere. You start slow. But can your work be considered a profession in the eyes of the IRS? Well, in a ruling handed down late last week by the United States Tax Court and seen by many, according to the New York Times, as an important victory for artists, the answer is yes. Why does this matter?
Hallelujah.
tell me why the impact is.
I think Micah and singer-songwriters and the next generation of musicians are going to benefit heavily from this, because at the end of the year, when I was first starting out, and I don't just do children's music, as you know. I've got a band I'm working on and in production now, a band called The Occasional Saints. It's a New Orleans-style band. But there are so many bands in this town, across New York State, and you run up your expenses. What are you going to do with those expenses if you can't show a profit against them? Is this really a business? Isn't this just another vanity product? And look, Mike is smiling at me across the table. He knows exactly that's the kind of crap that musicians have to deal with at come tax time. I didn't spend this money, thousands of dollars, because for fun. I did it because I think it's a legitimate product. I went to Nathan at Harmonious because I spent my money with him because I think I can sell my CDs. I want to advance my art. To not be able to have to defend that come tax time is huge. It's huge. It sounds like a Fusillo ad. It's huge.
Micah, you agree?
I mean, I don't think it's really changed how I've had to file taxes beforehand.
Oh, it will, my friend.
I mean, people aren't really buying records as much to begin with. I make a lot of most of my money touring, and I count my expenses that way. I don't see how it has a huge effect. Maybe the come tax time next year, maybe I'll see a difference, but I don't see a huge difference.
Is it a validation in the eyes of sort of tax law that what you're doing is art no matter what the...
I guess, yeah, like a little pat on the back that it's your profession and it's a legitimate thing.
A little pat on the back to you. Paul is saying it's going to have a much more tangible result.
It will, I can say, and maybe not for you. Maybe you... I've seen Micah perform. He's extraordinary. I was in Boston watching my daughter Julia perform, and who's on the bill but Micah. So all the we were just before the show. I said, "My gosh, I've seen you play. Your stuff is fantastic." And look, not everyone is right out of the gate can be as successful as Micah is. And it may take a year or two where you're just running up expenses before you're making any money. And what do you do with those expenses? How's that? So it's those musicians who may need a little bit more time on the tarmac before they get airborne. That's going to help greatly. And Jeff and I run into this problem. Some of my projects take 2 or 3 years to create. So what do I do with those expenses over the couple of years if I'm not showing any profit against those expenses?
Yeah, you're showing nothing or it takes a while. Authors, for example, they deal with that. You know, the expenses of researching and writing, and yet there's no book sales coming in yet.
That's
and
right.
And the government's saying, well, what are you really doing there? Why are you writing this off? You know, just interesting to see them sort of codifying art as a profession. And in this case, the tax court decision wasn't just involving music, but music is obviously an offshoot. And so I don't know, Micah, maybe you'll be proven wrong here.
Hopefully, we'll see.
I think all of us can tell you that what we all want is simplification when it comes to tax law, and at least you'll have a little bit more clarity when it comes to that. But but Jeff brings up an important point, I think, which is that the industry and the recording side of music is changing, and we're not going to go back to the point when there was only Lyndon Oakes and the Black Dogs and a few others in the world. We're not moving back in that direction. And then the real question becomes, how good can some of these amateur products get? I say amateur, the stuff that you can do at home. Obviously, Nathan Davenport exists because you're trying to sort of split that difference, that you may not be a brick-and-mortar in one-place studio, but you also know that people don't want to just record on their cell phones or on their iPads, et cetera.
Right.
But where do you see it going?
Well, I mean, I'm trying to bridge the gap between both of them. I've had a studio downtown, a brick-and-mortar location, and, I mean, it's not really sustainable these days, so I try to go towards the mobile side of it. And, I mean, I don't know. There's just a lot of, as far as expenses, there's a lot of that. Like, I've spent far more than my profit in the past 3 or 4 years as well, just as an engineer, and then I'm in a band as well. So these sort of things are like validation, like you were saying. It shows that musicians and artists people are starting to take them more seriously, which I think is important. This bill is having that conversation. I think that's important.
And Paul, when you look at the structure of this kind of legislation, again, if you're just joining us, the New Yorkers Music Coalition just launched this week in an effort to pass a new tax credit, a piece of law that would be similar to the film tax credit that is trying to woo Hollywood. And, you know, a lot of people will say, well, that was the reason that Spider-Man was shooting in downtown Rochester, and it's already having an impact. Well, they want to provide musicians, or at least people in the industry, with a 20% income tax credit for qualifying expenditures. This only works for the Micahs of the world if at the end of the year, if he records, he's going to get a 20% credit because that will include studio time, any other musicians he hired to help record, et cetera. But it looks like it will.
Yeah, I think it's going to have a significant impact. Look, there's a project that was just done here. Jeff was alluding to it briefly. Our friend Andy Babuke from the Chesterfield Kings, a super group was formed this year involving members from The Cars, Blondie, Romantics and the Chesterfield Kings. And that band is now called Empty Hearts. They're starting a tour, I think, this week. They're off to the Orient and then touring Europe. Is it next week? Yeah. All right. So that was recorded here in Rochester. I mean, again, props to Rochester and to the kind of vibrant music community that's reported by Frank DeBlaise and Jeff Spivak, all good media coverage here, because this is an unbelievable place for music. And I think that kind of legislation is going to have a direct impact on the music community. It may be subtle at first. It may have a de minimis impact on the smaller players in the business, and maybe disproportionate on the bigger players. I'm okay with that, because that means there'll be more studios, there'll be more musicians, there'll be more of a culture here, and more opportunity. And I think, and I don't like trickle down as a general concept in economics. I will let me say that.
I did not know we were going in this direction.
In this context, I think anything that advances the music community is going to enhance everybody. There's going to be more mobile units, mobile demand for Nathan. There'll be more gigs for Mike and more studios to choose from. As his projects get bigger and bigger, ultimately they will. I can guarantee it, Mike, that's what's going
to
happen.
Well, Brian writes to us and says, got out of the music business because everyone can record, too much competition, which is what a fascinating comment, because you think about the fact that all of the modern recording devices would give everyone an opportunity. But Brian is writing and saying, that's sort of what drove me out. There's too much noise out there, and it's hard to sort of break through with quality stuff. What do you think, Micah?
Well, that's just the nature of the business now. You can't really fight that change. That is what it is.
No sense complaining about it?
Yeah, I mean, you just have to put out as much quality music as you can and find the listeners from there. I think it's a great thing that technology has gone this far to allow anybody to do that, because there used to be gatekeepers that prevented musicians to be able to record in certain studios or have certain software or recording on certain microphones. To have that accessibility is a great thing.
And here's something that Jeff Schmidt did not experience a few decades ago in this industry. You never had somebody sitting at home with a cell phone and a guitar saying, I'm going to do something that's going to go viral. Now, nobody knows what's going to go viral, but occasionally someone breaks through because they're found. They've got a great voice, or they do great covers or something like that. That part of the world has really changed, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, and it's all good. I mean, look, Julia benefited hugely from that. She made a lot of those early videos.
Are you disagreeing over there?
No, it was scary. Go ahead, Jeff.
But I just wanted to finish. When it came time to finish the record, she had to go to a studio to do it right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's
so you break through with sort of the ease of technology,
right,
the rough stuff.
Right.
But if you're going to be polished, then you've got to move on.
When it's time to get the finished product done, you've got to get the better rooms, the better mics, and get a better producer to work with you to get it right. And so, you know, overall, you've got more opportunities, and that's a great thing. And you've got opportunities to promote yourself because of the internet, et cetera. So, you know, that's all good. But, you know, you got to do both, I think.
Julie won't appreciate this, but I'm going to tell the story anyway. When she recorded her first record, it was bare bones. One take, we're done.
Yeah.
One end gun. That's how she rolled. Simple mic, one mic, guitar, and voice. That's it. Killer songs, a great voice. That's her talent. As Micah says, talent will win out. However,
I hope, yes.
There was a blog among professional engineers that was rather substantial, how I would have re-recorded Julia Nunes' CD. And it was what mics he should use, what was wrong,
wow,
what were the filters.
That seems
They picked her apart, not musically.
In terms of the technical.
The technical. He said that technically the album sucked. The only reason she succeeded is that it was the power of the music and the raw emotion that was still coming through this crappy production. Eventually, you got to deal with the demon of production, and that it is part of the art.
Well, and Nathan mentioned $40 an hour.
Yeah, $40 an hour.
I mean, some people who are not
and I drive to you.
Because some people who are not in the music industry hear $40 an hour and they think, oh my gosh, you know. that's cost prohibitive if you want to do 6, 8, 10 songs. And I, by the way, I'm framing this all in the old paradigm of an album, which that may go away eventually too. I don't know.
It'll bite your tongue.
I know. But
I hope not. Yeah.
But when you're talking $40 an hour, how many hours to do a song? Let me ask around the table. I'm very curious to know what people in this industry think it takes to get one song. And I know it depends.
Well, yeah, it definitely depends. I've worked with artists where they take 2 hours to do one song.
I mean, if it's Bruce Springsteen doing Atlantic City, that's bare bones. but if it's not, what's typical?
It's usually, like I said, I've dealt with people that it's 2 hours for a song, or like a lot of punk rock musicians, they'll do 4 hours, whole album's done. So,
oh my goodness.
I mean, it really, really depends. I would say 4 to 8 hours an average is what I deal
for
with.
For an album?
That's for like an EP. No. An album would probably be double that, 16, 32 hours or more. I mean, it's really hard to say.
Okay, but is 4 to 6 hours with you common for one song?
That's probably between two and four songs.
Okay, yeah. So average it out more than...
Because I work with a lot of local
okay,
musicians.
So more than $100 a song. Micah, what's the average for you? One song in the studio.
I mean, it depends on what kind of instruments you're putting on. If you're doing like a full band production, I would say like 5 to 6 hours for a song is... And if you have pre-production...
I was going to say, is that before mixing or is that...
Well, pre-production, if everybody's rehearsed before going into the studio... Yeah. I would say 4 to 6 hours for one song, and that's just recording it. And then you get into mixing, and then you get into mastering, which is a whole nother ballgame. That's a whole nother monster.
Okay, so if it's...
Meaning expense.
Yes.
Yeah.
If it's 6 hours, I'm not going to ask you what you paid in Nashville with a friend unless you want to tell us, but...
That was based on a day. You have to rent out the facility for a whole day, and I think per day it was around $1,000 a day.
$1,000 a day.
Yeah. And that's, you know, you can be there as long as you want or, you know, as not long as you want, basically. But that's a lot of money. And I got a great deal recording in there to get less than that. But that's kind of par for the course down there.
So consider if you spent 10 hours on that day in there, that's $100 an hour.
Right.
Which is probably, I don't know what's normal now, Jeff, in terms of hourly costs. Is there a normal anymore?
No, I don't think. I mean, it runs, you know, from modest fees up to, you know, 100, 150, 200. Depends on where you are, you know. An hour.
Yeah. Do you have a framework in mind of how many hours for one song in the studio?
Yeah, do you have a... I'm curious.
Boss, yeah. What's your budget,
Evan? I want to know what your budget is.
What's your budget, Evan? No, honestly, that's tough to answer. Some of Paul's songs are quite involved. I mean, he had one on this last record which changed tempo 7 times in 1 minute. And when he first played it for me, I said... You want a multi-track?
How do you click track that, right?
Yeah.
You don't.
It took a little doing to do it, but we did it.
All right.
But,
so.
Know, yeah, so it's tough. I mean, it really, you know, it depends on how involved. If it's more simple, if it's a few instruments, yeah, you could go with fewer hours. If it's more involved like that, you've got to go up on the higher end of things.
How many Vincent Nunes albums are there?
We've recorded 7, and we're halfway through number 8.
Okay, so... Do you have in your own mind what you expect to do? How many hours for one song in a studio?
I don't, because
everyone's different.
It's totally
different.
You know, I'll go to Jeff. As I said, I have 7 rhythm changes, and they're not just an extra beat here. They're entirely different rhythm changes.
It's meter change. I mean, it's from 4 to 3, and then fast to slow. It's like
you're not going to do that in an hour. Yeah. There's some songs that I've done. I'm in and out an hour, 2 hours the most. A simple track, we're done. But then there's sometimes that Sergeant Pepper in me that says, I want to hear this. I want to hear a gospel choir. I want to have a chorus. I want to hear the singers from the Fairport Middle School chorus will come in and blow this song up, and it sounds like I've got a small village singing along with me.
All right. So, and the reason I asked and wanted to go around the table is you see the range there. What Paul's talking about could be, you know, could be $1,000 or $2,000 a song. Nathan's work tends to keep it around $100, $150 a song, sort of a general ballpark. But it's a huge range. And either way, if you're a new musician trying to break through, you may see that and think it's not even worth doing. And I suspect, and I want to sort of wrap here, Micah, do you talk to musicians who see that and they think it's cost prohibitive to even try?
Yeah, people are definitely discouraged. But I think that's also it. That's a gatekeeper in and of itself to push away musicians that aren't really serious about being
That's
professional musicians. Because if there was a certain blueprint to be successful as a musician, everybody would be successful.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point. All right, well, if you want to check out the coalition, it's nysmusic.org. We'll see what ends up coming out of this, but they are really trying to model this after the film tax credit. And some closing thoughts here. Nathan Davenport, some closing thoughts from you on, you know, I know you've worked in music business before as well, too. This is going to change the industry in Rochester, the Finger Lakes, yes or no?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I definitely think so.
It's going to impact people enough to say, we're going to keep recording and we're going to do it here.
Yeah, I definitely think so. It'll give people incentive to go and make records. That's what I would hope for anyway, so yeah.
Micah?
I just find myself...
You're the skeptic in the room.
Yeah, I feel like I'm the cynic here, but I just have so many questions about the parameters of who's eligible to apply, because basing it on the film tax credit, the budgets for that are being applied to that tax credit were huge. And that's more advantageous to the bigger companies. And obviously that trickles down to smaller companies. But how that would affect upstate New York, I feel like there needs to be a bigger incentive rather than keeping it all in New York City. I mean, it's a great idea in theory. And obviously they're trying to help musicians, which is awesome. But I think there needs to be a more of a conversation and specifically defining the parameters of eligibility.
All right, Jeff, real quick. Does that change industry?
I hope so. Tax code matters. I hope it does.
And Paul Vincent Nunes?
I think Micah hit it out of the park with his comments. I think he's right to wait and see, but I'll take the glass is half full.
You always do. I like that. great panel. Great stuff here. And we'll continue to follow the NYSmusic.org coalition and this legislation. Thanks very much to Nathan Davenport, the owner of Harmonious Recording Solutions. Micah, a local musician. Paul Vincent Nunes, a children's recording artist, among many other things. Adult recording artist, attorney, bow tie, bon vivant. And and Jeff Schmidt from Red Dart Music. Thanks, everybody.
Thank
Thanks
you.
For a great
Bye.
Panel.
Thanks.
All right. We'll talk to you on a Friday on member-supported public radio.